Good morning, and welcome to The J. M. Smucker Company's first quarter 2015 earnings conference call. At this time, I would like to inform you that this conference is being recorded and that all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open up the conference for questions and answers after the presentation. Please limit yourself to two initial questions during the Q&A session and re-queue if you then have additional questions. I will now turn the conference over to Aaron Broholm, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our first quarter earnings conference call. Thank you for joining us today. Here with me on the call are Richard Smucker, Chief Executive Officer, Vince Byrd, President and Chief Operating Officer, Mark Belgia, Chief Financial Officer, Mark Smucker, President, U.S. Retail Coffee, and Paul Smucker Wagstaff, President, U.S. Retail Consumer Foods. Steve Oakland, President, International Food Service and Natural Foods, is also on the line from another location. Our prepared comments this morning will be organized as follows. Richard will begin with an overview of our first quarter performance. Vince will then provide an update on our business segments, and Mark will close with additional comments on our financial results for the quarter and our outlook for the year. During this conference call, we will make forward-looking statements that reflect the company's current expectations about future plans and performance. These forward-looking statements rely on a number of assumptions and estimates, and actual results may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties. I encourage you to read the full disclosure statement in the press release concerning forward-looking statements. Additionally, please note the company uses non-GAAP results for the purpose of evaluating performance internally. Discussion on non-GAAP information is detailed in our press release located on our corporate website at jmsmucker.com. A replay of this call will also be available on the website. If you have any follow-up questions after today's call, please contact me. I will now turn the call over to Richard.
Thank you, Aaron. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. With a record quarter of non-GAAP earnings per share, we are pleased with the start of our fiscal year. I will begin with a few highlights for the quarter. First, volume gains were achieved across a number of our major U.S. retail brands and categories. In our coffee segment, volume was up 2%, driven by the performance of our Folgers, Cafe Bustelo, and Dunkin' Donuts brands. Lower price realization resulted in the decline in net sales for the segment and for the company. Within consumer foods, volume gains were realized in several key categories, including Jif peanut butter, Smucker's fruit spreads, and Crisco oils. Total volume for the entire segment was in line with the prior year. As anticipated, volume declined in our international food service and natural food segments, reflecting the prior year planned business rationalizations, which will be fully lapped by the end of the calendar year. Second, as anticipated, significant improvement in consumer foods segment profit, primarily due to peanut butter, drove operating income growth for the company. Lastly, this, combined with lower interest expense and fewer shares outstanding, resulted in non-GAAP earnings per share increasing 11% to $1.34. We're encouraged by these results in light of the challenging economic environment that persists. As we look ahead to the holiday period and the balance of fiscal 2015, we are optimistic in delivering another year of earnings per share growth. This is supported by our ability to manage our cost to price to cost relationships, the expected contribution from innovation and new products, our strong marketing and merchandising plans, our ongoing investments to optimize our supply chain, and the strategic deployment of our cash flow. Let me briefly comment on our recent announcement regarding our agreement to acquire the Saheli snack business. This is an exciting, enabling acquisition that adds a portfolio of innovative and on-trend premium nut and fruit snacks. With the growing snacking trend, Saheli provides a new platform for growth. complementing our recent innovation efforts within our consumer foods business, where we have introduced several new snacking items, such as the Jif to Go dippers. We look forward to completing the acquisition next month and welcoming the Sahale employees to the Smucker Company. Also, supported by a strong balance sheet, we believe we are well positioned to continue adding attractive brands and businesses to our portfolio. In closing, we feel good about the start of the fiscal year and are encouraged to be moving beyond certain headwinds that we have spoken to you over the past few quarters as we continue to show progress across our businesses. We firmly believe, with our commitment to our strategy, the strength of our leading brands, and our team's ability to adapt and execute, we remain well-positioned for long-term growth. With that, I'll turn the call over to Vince.
Thank you, Richard, and good morning, everyone. We are pleased with our first quarter results, and these reflect solid volume performance across a number of our major brands, supported by pricing actions and the contribution from innovation. Also, during the quarter, we began to lap some of our recent headwinds. Turning to the three business segments, in U.S. retail coffee, we achieved a ninth consecutive quarter of year-over-year volume growth, reflecting gains in each of our largest coffee brands. Volume growth in mainstream roast and ground coffee led to the Folgers brand being up 2% for the quarter on top of a 4% increase last year. Folgers Gourmet Selection K-Cups also realized solid volume gains. Dunkin' Donuts coffee continued its momentum, with volume up 3% against a strong 6% prior year comp. In addition, the Cafe Bustelo brand had strong volume growth with double-digit percentage gain. The introduction of Cafe Bustelo branded K-Cups added to these results. During the quarter, coffee segment net sales were impacted by lower net price realization. While we announced a 9% list price increase on the majority of our portfolio in June, pricing on committed promotional programs, along with continued price investment to remain competitive on shelf, temporarily delayed the impact. We expect full reflection of the price increase in the second quarter. Coffee segment profit was 4% below the prior year's first quarter. In addition to comparing to a strong prior year result, other factors affecting comparability included a more favorable price-to-cost ratio in last year's first quarter and lower K-Cup profitability, as previewed on our year-end call. As a reminder, we anticipated K-Cup margins to be compressed in fiscal 2015. We are encouraged by the initial contributions from new products and new distribution channels, and our K-Cup business is on track to deliver our profitability expectations for the full year. Also during the quarter, we made the decision to discontinue the Life is Good coffee brand. This resulted in a small charge to segment profit. Shifting to the consumer food segment, overall volume was in line with a strong first quarter in the prior year. Gains in several key brands and categories were offset by declines in lower margin baking mixes and flour. Looking at the performance within the spreads categories, volume for the Jif brand was up 4% on top of an 8% increase last year. This result reflects a balance of price, brand support, and innovation. Smucker fruit spread volume grew 2% behind gains in traditional varieties as well as continued growth of our natural fruit spreads. Also within the brand, remain pleased with the initial performance of Smucker Fruitfuls. Lastly, Smucker's Uncrustables frozen sandwich achieved double-digit volume growth in retail for the 10th consecutive quarter. The completion of our Scottsville manufacturing expansion provides the needed capacity to support our growth initiatives for this product line. Our overall PB&J business is in the midst of the back-to-school promotional season. We're encouraged by the merchandising plans we have in place and the initial consumer takeaway that will ultimately be the key to our performance for the period. In the bake aisle, the Crisco brand continued its momentum with another quarter of strong volume growth. As soybean oil futures have declined to five-year lows, we have reflected lower costs in our pricing, impacting net sales. The primary soft spot in the consumer foods during the quarter was the Pillsbury brand. This reflects declines in the overall category and increased competitive activities, primarily on flour and base cake items. As we enter the fall bake period, we continue to focus our efforts on frostings and other higher margin products. We are also encouraged by the new Pillsbury items to be launched and another solid year of holiday merchandising plans. Segment profit was up 19% over the prior year. As expected, much of the increase was driven by improvements in peanut butter profitability. Prior year segment profit was negatively impacted by peanut butter price declines that were taken in advance of recognizing lower peanut costs. For the full year, we expect peanut butter margins to now be more in line with historical average of the past several years. Lastly, within this segment, as Richard mentioned, we are excited about the acquisition of Sahale Snacks and look forward to the contributions of Sahale towards growing our overall consumer foods business. In international food service and natural foods, much of the first quarter segment profit decline was expected, primarily attributed to factors we discussed on our year-end call, including the weaker Canadian dollar as compared to a year ago, and a higher run rate on trade spend in food service coffee, which will continue to impact our year-over-year comparisons until fully lapped beginning in the third quarter. Our focus remains on growing the overall segment, and we're encouraged by recent accomplishments, including market share gains across most of our categories in Canada, driven by innovation and merchandising. Within food service, the ongoing conversion of our customers to our Folgers branded liquid coffee offering. In natural foods, our integrated sales organization is driving expanded distribution opportunities for the True Roots brand. And lastly, our partner in China, C-Mild, continues to grow and positively contributed to our first quarter results. Overall, for the segment, we remain optimistic about achieving full-year sales and segment profit growth in 2015. In summary, we are encouraged by the start to our fiscal year considering the current industry dynamics, and we look forward to executing on our back-to-school and holiday programs. We have a great team of passionate employees, and as always, we thank them for their efforts. I will now turn the call over to Mark.
Thank you, Ben, and good morning, everyone. I will start by providing additional color on our first quarter results and then conclude with our outlook for the full year. Net sales decreased $27 million, or 2%, in the quarter, reflecting a 3% reduction in net price realization, primarily attributable to the coffee segment. The impact of lower volume, mostly resulting from declines in baking and business exits, was essentially offset by the contribution from acquisitions. And finally, mix added 1 percentage point of growth. GAAP earnings per share were $1.14 this quarter, down from $1.19 in the first quarter of last year. Included in this year's GAAP earnings were $21 million of unallocated derivative losses, compared to a gain of $5 million in the prior year. The current year loss reflects a change in election effective this quarter to no longer qualify commodity and foreign currency exchange derivatives for hedge accounting treatment. Derivative gains and losses are now recognized immediately in earnings, which may result in increased volatility in GAAP results going forward. In conjunction, we've revised our definition of segment profit and non-GAAP earnings to exclude these unallocated derivative gains and losses until the related inventory is sold. A Form 8K was filed in July to recast segment profit and non-GAAP earnings for prior years to exclude previously disclosed unrealized mark-to-market adjustments on derivative contracts. Excluding hedging gains and losses and other special project costs that are defined in our press release, non-GAAP EPS increased 11%, primarily attributable to three factors. First, gross profit drove an overall increase in operating income. Gross profit increased $11 million, or 2%, reflecting lower commodity costs, which were only partially offset by pricing. Favorable mix also contributed. This resulted in gross margin improving to 37.8%, an increase of 150 basis points over the prior year. Partially offsetting this was higher SD&A, driven by an increase in selling expenses, primarily due to incremental expenses associated with last year's acquisitions and a charge related to the discontinuation of the Life is Good coffee brand. Second, lower interest expenses contributed to EPS growth, reflecting the interest rate swap entered into during the prior year. The year-over-year benefit of the swap will be lapped as we proceed through the second quarter. And third, a decrease in the number of average shares outstanding resulting from last year's share repurchase activity. Turning to cash flow, cash used for operating activities was $8 million in the first quarter, compared to a source of cash of $82 million in the prior year. This decline is primarily attributable to a greater current year use of cash for working capital needs, reflecting higher green coffee costs and ending inventory, as well as certain timing factors. Adding capital expenditures of $49 million for the quarter, free cash flow was $57 million negative. We continue to project capital expenditures of $240 million for fiscal 2015, reflecting an expected ramp up in spending for the last 9 months of the year. With no changes in our earning guidance or CapEx from original estimates, we are not adjusting our free cash flow target of $625 to $635 million. That said, we are currently tracking above working capital levels necessary to achieve this goal. We will see a reduction in working capital from current levels as we move through the holiday period and plan to provide an update to our estimate following the second quarter. We ended the first quarter with short-term borrowings of $470 million against our $1.5 billion credit facility. With the upcoming closing of the $80 million Sahali acquisition and seasonal working capital needs, we expect short-term borrowings to peak near $700 million in the second quarter and then decline during the remainder of the year. As noted in our Form 8K filed earlier this month, we entered into a $1 billion commercial paper program, allowing us to take advantage of favorable interest rates and providing additional flexibility to meet our short-term borrowing needs. We are now in the market, converting our existing revolve borrowings to commercial paper. Considering the higher-than-anticipated level of short-term borrowings, yet at a more favorable interest rate resulting from the CP program, we continue to expect net interest expense in the range of $65 to $70 million for the full year. This range reflects our current projections and outlooks for short-term borrowing and interest rates. Let me conclude with our sales and EPS outlook. We now anticipate 2015 net sales will increase at a rate slightly less than the 5% guidance provided on our year-end call. Despite this modest decline, we're maintaining our non-GAAP earnings per share range of $5.95 to $6.05. Sales of approximately $25 million associated with the Sahali acquisitions are included within our revised guidance. As we invest in the business to support distribution growth, we do not expect material bottom line contributions from this acquisition in the near term. And with that, we will open up the calls to your questions. Operator, if you please queue up the first question.
Thank you. The question and answer session will begin at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing any numbers. Should you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. As a reminder, please limit yourself to 2 questions during the Q&A session. Should you have additional questions, you may re-queue, and the company will take questions as time allows. Please stand by for the first question. Our first question comes from Alexia Howard of Sanford Bernstein. Please state your question, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to ask about the outlook for coffee profits from here. You've obviously seen a rebound in the profits on the peanut butter side. Coffee input costs have been rising. It sounded as though last quarter you might have been expecting a little bit more of a bump in coffee profits than the decline you saw this time. Given that the list price increase is kicking in next quarter, How does the outlook look from here? Thank you.
Alexia, this is Mark Belgia. I guess it is a little hard to hear your question quite candidly. It was breaking up a bit. But I think what we would say are generally across our businesses, as opposed to getting into specifics of any three, you'll recall at the end of the year, we said that we expected our segment profits to be up in all three of our segments. I think that's still a fair comment, despite where coffee came in. I think what I would say is that we expect overall to be up consistently in total because obviously we're not adjusting guidance. I think the mix between the three segments may be a little bit different than what we expected out of the gate.
And then can I ask about share repurchases versus acquisitions going forward and uses of cash? Thank you.
Sure. I think just to restate our order of preference of spending our cash, we have our general umbrella statement of 50% to shareholders and 50% to the business, which, we have held true to. M&A and finding the right strategic investment is clearly the number one use of cash, and as we made a small acquisition or will be here in the next quarter, would be our number one use. But I think we've demonstrated that if there are not opportunities, we still feel that buying back shares is a good use of our cash. And again, just to remind everyone, we sort of set a general guideline of a couple percentage points of outstanding shares, which is about 2 million shares currently.
Thank you very much. I'll pass it on.
Our next question comes from Chris Groh of Stifel. Please state your question, sir.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I had two questions, if I could. The first would, when you talked last quarter and you gave your outlook for fiscal 15, you talked a lot about some pretty aggressive new product activity across the company. I'm just curious, as you go through the different divisions, I guess the degree to which that benefited the quarter, did you have a lot of these new products shipping? And I guess what sort of contribution do you expect from new products throughout the year?
Chris, this is Vince Bird. I would say yes, we are on target to still launch well over 100 new items this year. As you know, we've also done that over the past couple of years. I believe we actually had about $80 million of new products contributed in the first quarter that were not in the portfolio 3 years ago. And we can turn to the three presidents, but at this point we have not changed our innovation pipeline and what we plan to introduce.
Yeah, I think this is Mark Smucker, Chris. And just in coffee, we're very pleased with the lineup of new products that we have coming out. Obviously, Bustelo and K-Cup is a notable one, but we do have new products in every segment and are launching a line of Folgers flavors that is basically coffee flavorings in a very small container that is essentially a new segment. So we're excited about what we have in the pipeline. As these things go during this time in the fiscal year, it is a little bit early because shipments have just begun. But we're optimistic.
And Chris, this is Paul. Just from a consumer food perspective, I just add on to what Mark said. And on the peanut butter side and overall, we're excited about the snacking opportunity, obviously with Sahali, but then also with Jif Dippers, the new product we launched on the Jif side, which is doing very well out of the gate. Our seasonals and our bold frostings on Pillsbury continue to do well, and we're excited about the upcoming fall bake. And then Fruitfuls for the Smucker brand. Again, that's early launch, but we see some good results out of the gate, and we're feeling comfortable that that's going to be a great line in the future.
Yeah, Steve, do you want to comment also on your areas?
Yeah, certainly. I think similar to what Mark said on timing, many of the new items in IFNF, specifically Canada, are around the baking season. So those are really not impacting the business yet. We expect those to impact the business in the second and third quarters. And I think we'll start to see the impact of NRAE as we get later in the fiscal year. There's a lot of work on new distribution and new items from NRAE. So we're excited about it, but the impact has yet to be felt.
Okay, that was great, a great overview. Just one quick follow-up maybe for Mark on pricing and coffee. And I guess there was a recent K-Cup price increase. I'm sure you can't discuss that if you have not followed that yet. But I guess my question would be that as you look at the K-Cup business and you have seen some more aggressive promotional spending there, is that category likely to see a continued heightened level of promotional spending? Is that what's proper for your business to try and regain some volume momentum there in K-Cups?
So, Chris, this is Mark. The short answer is yes, there is increased competitive activity. From a pricing perspective, I would tell you that the increased competitive activity is more around the frequency of promotions than it is around going deeper. And so, I think that across the category, you're just seeing a more activity, but the relative pricing between brands remains more or less in line with our expectations just from being from Rational. That said, you're right, we can't comment on our pricing action, but in light of the competitive situation, we certainly will evaluate it.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Next, we'll hear from David Driscoll of Citi. Please state your question, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, David.
Morning, David.
First question is just simply on the guidance. Did the first quarter results meet your internal forecast? And if the revenues are lowered for the full year, what's the offset that keeps earnings unchanged?
David, this is Mark Belgia. The results for the first quarter were a little below where we had planned, but obviously it's early in the year, so we've maintained guidance, and what you're going to see is we're going to see some productivity gains, we think, through the course of the year. We're obviously looking at budgets. There will be some marketing adjustments as well, but to that point, you can imagine with, 5.5% of our sales and marketing, you do the math, it's $300 million, that in a quarter into the year, there's some flexibility as far as addressing that without impacting the businesses too strongly. So we feel pretty confident to get that. So it's a combination of those things that we'll see flow through over the last three quarters.
Okay, my second question just goes to IFNF. I'm curious here also about the quarter and the year in terms of profitability and sales in this segment. In fiscal 2014, that segment had, I think it's fair to characterize it as a bad year, and I thought you guys had indicated last quarter that F-15 would be much better. I think Vince said in his prepared remarks that he did expect full-year profitability to be positive, but, of course, that's not true in the quarter. So, can you just walk us through a little bit here, what's going to happen in this segment and how strong your confidence is in that profit forecast?
Steve, I'll start, and then I'll turn it over to you for some details. David, your points are well taken, and we still hold to what we said in my earlier comment about all three segments being up year over year. Candidly, last year was a tough quarter for the segment. We do expect growth. I think as Steve will elaborate, certainly there were some things that happened that we are lapping, and we'll see a greater benefit of that in the back half of the year, particularly around the trade spend and food service. But Steve, you want to comment further?
Yeah, certainly. The impact of this quarter was the Canadian dollar, was the exits, and the trade spend. And if you remember, we made those trade spend adjustments primarily in the third and fourth quarters. So those are flowing through the income statements in the first quarter against a quarter that didn't have those. So as that volume normalizes, that trade spend volume normalizes, I think we'll see favorability in the back half. We also feel very strongly that the merchandising programs, both in our Canadian business and in our natural foods business, are very strong for the back half. And we're seeing momentum in our food service business on our Folgers liquid coffee business. So we think the businesses are actually individually performing well. All of the noise should flush its way out by the end of the year. We'll have the exits behind us, and we think we can make up, quite frankly, the currency impact and still show modest growth for the full year.
So if I just kind of repeat something, so second quarter is going to look a lot more like the first quarter here, and then third quarter and fourth quarter is where you would expect to see sizable improvements in profitability within your segment. Is that a fair characterization?
That is similar to how we see it. I would expect the only difference in that, I'd expect a little contribution from True Roots, the NRA business, in the second quarter.
Okay, I'll pass it along. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Moving on, we'll hear from Mario Contreras with Deutsche Bank.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Mario.
So this was the highest margin we've seen from the U.S. retail segment in at least the last 3 years. I'm just wondering how sustainable you think this margin level is, or should maybe some incremental competitive activity over the course of the year eat into that a little bit?
Hey, Mario, it's Mark Belgia. Yeah, we clearly had our strong margins. I think it reflected probably most key was the turnaround in the peanut butter business. That has been the drag, quite candidly, for the last four or five quarters. Obviously, even though coffee profit dollars were down, they still maintain a strong segment percentage. So You know, I don't see dramatic changes. I think it's normal course as we move through the next couple quarters. You do tend to see a little bit margin because as our baking business plays a larger part because of fall bake, that, as you know, is a lower margin business. So I think you will see some pull down from the first quarter. And then I think as you look forward, it's going to become a bit of a function of what pricing does, because as you know, we focus on profit dollar growth. So if we were to see any kind of significant price movement, increasing that that top line, that will moderate the margin accordingly.
All right, thanks. And then just one additional question. With respect to the recently announced Ahalli acquisition, just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the long-term opportunities for this business. For example, it has a large C-store presence, maybe some opportunity to get some Smucker products through that distribution, and vice versa, get bigger traditional retail distribution for Ahalli. Thanks.
Yeah, hi, Mario. This is Paul. And again, we're very excited about the Ahalli opportunity. You know, the snacking category, as you all know, is growing very significantly, and they have a really unique portfolio of products that are very, they're great, obviously, tasting products, but also they're positioned well, a little premium, and their distribution is not full, I would say, so there's opportunity for us to gain distribution in other channels. And then also the learnings that we get from them, we can also apply to some of our other brands. And so although it's very early in the process as we stand today, we do feel very comfortable that there's going to be some great opportunity, not only just with Ahalli, but some of our other brands. So we're excited with that.
Mario, this is Vince. I would only add that although much on a smaller scale, it's not that too dissimilar to when we acquired the Folgers business that had a very strong presence in the dollar channel where we did not have much distribution. And if you look at Ahalli, even where they're merchandised in store and produce sections, et cetera, will be new for us, but we really think we'll be able to leverage our go-to-market strategy and maybe more traditional channels to really help grow that business in the future.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
We'll now hear from Farah Aslam of Stephens. Please state your question.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Farah.
Good morning.
Mark, you had mentioned briefly your cost savings programs that should kick in as the year progresses. Could you just remind us what the cost savings from your actions will be for this year and when those contributions will flow through?
Yeah, as far as the combination, you know, we said at the beginning of the year that we'll have about $10 million of additional benefit from the full year operations of our Orville plan and getting that, you know, kind of running smoothly. So that we continue to see. And that was in our original guidance. That continues. I think in the other areas where we're going to, you know, cover some of the top line shortfall that we spoke to will really be a function of focusing on the spending side. And this holds true across our manufacturing facilities as well as our corporate function. So that would be the driver, I would say, of most of the production opportunities. And again, it's early in the year, so it does allow the team some flexibility to look at where, you know, some spending that might not be as necessary as originally planned. That's where we'll focus first.
Okay. And the second question is around coffee. Now that you've taken your price increase here in the second quarter, how are you seeing the promotional cadence flow through versus competition? Is it in line with your expectations, greater or less?
As far as Mark Smucker, it is in line with our expectations. As you know, part of the reason for, obviously, we take price to be transparent with our customers. Part of the reason we took it in the first quarter was to make sure that we had our pricing strategy set for the key holiday period. So literally as we speak, we are seeing pricing move on shelf, both in our own business as well as all of the key competitors. And so we would expect that relative price gaps, we will continue to manage and do a good job doing that. And so overall, I think the pricing across the category and the segments within it are in line with our expectations.
Great. That's helpful.
Matthew Granger of Morgan Stanley has our next question.
Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks. So just first on coffee, could you talk a bit about the outcome or the impact of some of the shelf resets that have taken place in the category during the summer, both on roast and ground in your K-Cup business? And then separately, just on K-Cups, could you update us a bit on some of the efforts you have in place to expand distribution in alternative channels where you feel you're making progress currently?
Sure. So when you look at the share trends, which are positive, if you look at the 12-week share trends sequentially, we've actually had some nice results in all of our segments. So K-Cup has stabilized and maybe increased slightly, and then you look at premium and mainstream, those also have positive trends as well. And we attribute that success to our promotional efforts, our brand support efforts, and we have seen that as shelf resets have occurred in the roast and ground space, we have won. And in fact, we have maintained the number of items on shelf versus competition. In the premium space, some of the smaller brands would have lost. And so we clearly have been successful in that front. On the K-Cup side, it's a little bit more of a mixed bag. Clearly, having Bustelo and some of our new items has helped us. And I think as we're still trying to study how that has impacted us, but I think overall we would say it is positive. And it just really varies by customer. And then, Matthew, you had another question on K-Cup.
The expanded channels, which club, et cetera, Mark.
Thanks, Vince. So in this expanded channels, we did talk last time about dollar, online, and club, and we have had some nice successes in all of that, which has contributed to our success in the quarter.
Okay, great. That's helpful. Thanks. And could I ask a quick follow-up as well on Pillsbury? I can definitely appreciate placing the focus on higher margin products going into the fall, but your commentary didn't seem particularly optimistic on competitive dynamics or category growth in the mixes, just sort of on a forward-looking basis. Do you expect to see improvement in the business performance here over the next few quarters? And can you just speak to your comfort level around the plans and sort of the promotional and merchandising efforts you have in place going into the fall?
Sure, Matthew. This is Paul. So a couple things. I'd say that we are optimistic on our business as far as the new items that we're planning on launching. You know, we're trying to focus on some of the key trends that are occurring from a consumer perspective, things like simple ingredients, and we have some products that we're coming out launching on that front, gluten-free items, and our seasonal items continue to do very well. We clearly focus on our frosting category, which is where we are the number one, and also it's profitable for us. There's about, in the last year, there's about 200 items that were launched in the baking category alone. And so that's added to some of the complexity of the category and some of the additional competitiveness that's taken place in that section. And so some of those new items have been more fad-related and more, I would say, not as relevant as some other ones. So we would hope that some of that would get sorted through and we would focus on more of the longer-term trends that our items we think are going after. You know, additionally, we think about our merchandising for fall bake. We're in very good position with the Pillsbury business. And when we think about oil is looking fantastic. We had a very good quarter last year. We're in great quarter, first quarter, and we look good for fall bake. So when we think of our total baking business, I think we want to include the Crisco brand as well as the Pillsbury brand. So, again, we feel good about going forward.
Okay, great. Thanks again, everyone.
Our next question comes from Akshay Jagdale of KeyBanc Capital Markets. Please state your question.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So a couple of questions on the K-Cup business. Can you give us an update on what your expectations are for K-Cup sales growth for 15? It seems like the quarter, at least from where I sit, came in better than I thought on the K-Cup side, and you have some pretty easy comps, especially in the back half for that business. You mentioned your share trends have at least stabilized and you're getting some incremental base. And from what I know, the new carafe on the 2.0 is also going to be positive for your new product. So can you just give us an overall update on sort of sales growth expectation and maybe talk a little bit about the 2.0 launch and sort of what impact that might have on your business?
Hi, Akshay. It's Mark Smucker. You know, I think we haven't really changed our outlook in terms of we do expect mid-single-digit volume growth on K-Cup. And as you look across the segment, shares are starting to stabilize a little bit. We have seen over the past 12 weeks some of the unlicensed growth has slowed somewhat, and you've seen the licensed player shares also sort of settle. We did see, as I mentioned earlier, a small uptick in our share, and so we're encouraged by that, but of course we need to continue to support the business. And then on 2.0, clearly we are confident that we are with the right partner. Our partnership with Green Mountain, as we've said before, has been fantastic, and we continue to be optimistic about that. We will play in all of the formats that the 2.0 machine will brew, and just believe in the consumer benefits that that new technology brings to bear in terms of flexibility and so forth. Keurig has done a great job of building a strong brand portfolio. And I think, as you've seen in the segment, with good support, the strong brands, leading brands, will continue to win.
Okay, that's helpful. And then any update on your relationship with Dunkin'? Obviously, the trends in the premium coffee side continue to be strong. So is there any, can you give us an update as to where you stand as it relates to the K-Cup business potentially?
I'll say this is Vince. You know, as we said before, our Dunkin' relationship is also equally very, very strong. We continue to work with them on the premium side, have introduced a number of new products. We continue to look at opportunities between our two companies for growth that would benefit both them and us, and there's really nothing new to report as it relates to K-Cups, but we're exploring a number of opportunities between our two companies.
Just one last one on M&A. Can you give us an overall update on sort of what you're seeing in terms of activity in the M&A space? It seems to me that, you know, obviously there's been a pickup in general in terms of M&A deals in the food space. You guys have obviously made some tuck-in acquisitions, so it seems to me that maybe valuations might be a little rich. Can you just help us understand the dynamics on the M&A side as you see them? Thank you.
Sure, Akshay. This is Richard. Basically, I agree with everything you said. The activity has increased. We've been able to get a couple nice tuck-ins and enabling acquisitions, which you know, we continue to look for those opportunities, along with bolt-ons and obviously occasionally some transformational. But you are right; there's more activity in our space, and you know, we're in a good position to play in that space because we have a very strong balance sheet and a good currency in our stock, if necessary. So, other than that, you're right on in the analysis of where the market is today. And Mark, you might have comment on that.
Yeah, Akshay, the only other thing I would add is and you kind of look at the transaction, and if you ask sort of what is different and what's driving some of these multiples and valuations maybe versus a few years ago. And I think the one thing you do hear quite a bit, I know several of our peers have announced transactions, is this whole concept of buying down the multiples. And so while you're seeing sort of this, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14 times being paid in the market, the ability of companies to take advantage of synergies and then also the step up in basis is really allowing companies to do transactions that at the end of the day, if they execute properly, do get them down to more traditional valuations. So I think, you know, until the interest rate environment changes and there's evidence that maybe that strategy of executing on synergies doesn't play out, I think you will continue to see these heightened levels.
Thank you. I'll pass it on.
Next, we'll hear from John Baumgartner of Wells Fargo. Please state your question.
Good morning. Thanks for the question. You know, just thinking about the retail consumer business, maybe if you can speak a bit to what you're seeing in terms of the peanut butter category. You know, it looks as though some of the price promotion in the Nielsen data has really increased over the past 4 or 8 weeks. So just, you know, in light of that, how are you thinking about the competitive environment there and then maybe risk to your peanut butter profit plan as fiscal 15 unfolds? Thank you.
Yeah, hi, John. This is Paul. When we think about the peanut butter category, right now, you know, it's we feel our business is very good, and we think about the back to school. We have great merchandising in place. The early consumer takeaway seems to be very strong, which we're pleased to see. From a competitive perspective, we would say that all the players, we categorize it, that all of the key players are really playing responsibly. It's competitive. There's no doubt about it. We are seeing some deals, which you typically see around this time of year back to school. But overall, we feel pretty good about the health of the category. There's a lot of new items that are coming into the segment from not only us but other competitors, and we feel that's going to overall increase the usage and consumption of peanut butter. And keep in mind, it's still one of the cheapest proteins out in the marketplace, and with some of the higher costs we've seen on the meat side of the business, meat side of the category, protein, we feel good about where peanut butter is going to play.
Thank you, Paul.
Next, we'll hear from Robert Moskow of Credit Suisse. Please state your question.
Hi, thanks. A quick question on Jif. I thought in your opening comments, Mark, you said that, or maybe it was Vince, said that we now expect peanut butter to return to more normalized margins. Has anything changed regarding your outlook for fiscal 15, or was that always pretty much your expectation? I think some people, including myself, I thought you might be able to overshoot on margins this year. And then secondly, in the mix, I think you said that the mix, Mark, you did say that the mix would be different this year in terms of the segments and how they deliver profit. Are you thinking that coffee will be a little bit less than you thought in terms of profit contribution, or is it international food service and natural foods that's going to be a little bit less than expected?
Yeah, Rob, this is Mark Belgel. I'll try to clarify and hit on both your questions. On the first one, you know, the peanut butter, because the last year, probably actually the last 6 to 7 quarters, was just much lower than the average, that what you're seeing is return. I mean, most of that profit gain in the Paul's segment was due to peanut butter. So, and that was built into our expectations, and I think that, you know, the growth in the business, as he just said, is to continue. So we'll still see profitability, but that was the big step up. And then in terms of just the overall profitability, your take is correct. I mean, we fell a little bit short on the coffee side. So the other two segments will continue to make up the difference to help us land at the original guidance for the company.
Okay. I mean, coffee had a very strong year, Mark. I remember you and I talking about this in fiscal 14. So just broadly speaking, I think there's some concern that, you know, the big step up in profits over the last 2 years, you and I talked about like $100 million step up. I mean, can you still protect that step up? Is that profit in the profit pool that you expect to be able to hold on to that there's no risk that deteriorates?
No, our expectation, and you've heard us say this 100 times, our expectation is to grow every business every year, and not saying that blindly, but no, we would expect to continue to maintain that portion of that overall profit pool. And, you know, as we look to the year, we would still see some profit growth, just maybe not to the degree we originally had at the outset.
Got it. Still growing. Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Jonathan Feeney of Athlos Research.
Good morning. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
In keeping with tradition, a couple of questions. The first is, how specifically are you thinking about the launch, the timing of the launch of Keurig 2.0 with respect to how you're, you know, modeling profits in that coffee segment? I mean, is that a significant factor in your thought process? And I would imagine there's been, you've mentioned this in passing before, but there should be some inventory build, and, you know, perhaps and maybe that's affecting the timing of your profit expectations over the course of the fiscal year. That'd be my first question. And the second question would be on the M&A front. You know, in a lot of great ways, the history of Smucker has been written by big transformative deals, getting into new categories, as you've talked about with investors, and, you know, having integrated those so successfully. When I look at, you know, Sahali Snacks, it's certainly a kind of acquisition you've done successfully. It is somewhat of a new category for you, though, but rather small and sort of niche-oriented. So I guess my question around Sahali would be, does this mean that if you did a big transformative deal, it would be in the direction of something like a Sahali Snacks, or are sort of all options on the table as they have been historically as far as you're on the lookout for bigger deals. Thanks very much.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Mark Smucker. I'll start with your question on 2.0. Really, the contribution this year is minimal. If you take into consideration that Keurig will be also selling 1.0 brewers alongside that, that aside, even if that were not the case, it would take some time before those 2.0 brewers would make their way into a significant portion of households that would be meaningful across the business. And so I would tell you that this year the contribution would be minimal.
And Jonathan, if you're satisfied with Mark's answer, I'll answer the one on M&A. This is Richard.
Pretty clear.
Good. We are, obviously, our strategy is to own number one brands sold in the center of the store in North America. That allows us to play in a lot of categories that we're not in today. So if you're looking at transformational acquisitions, I think you could be confident that we are looking in a number of different categories that are beyond the current categories that we're in today. We weren't in coffee, as you know, 6 years ago, and we are now in coffee, and it plays a significant role. So we are not, and we think that there are several other categories that could fit very nicely. Now, the Sahale acquisition is a nice fit and gets us into a snacking category in a small way to really learn that business. But we think that has some real legs for growth, as we've mentioned already. But that's one category we were dabbling in with some of our products, but now this gets us in a bigger way. But there are other categories out there that we do think would fit. So we hope that at some point in time there's something to announce, but nothing today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from Chuck Cerankosky of North Coast Research. Please state your question.
Good morning. When you look at the sales growth pressures in the quarter and some of it continuing into the year, what attention might be needed on expense control?
Hey Chuck, this is Mark Belgia. Again, reiterating some of the points from a little bit earlier is that, you know, being one quarter in gives us a lot of flexibility in terms of looking. And as you know, any budget has some discretionary funds in that. So right now the challenge across the organization is to look and we will implement, changes. You know, we're not in a forced situation here. I don't want to come across as being, that drastic. It's just being very prudent in cost management and using 8 months of the remaining fiscal year to close a little bit of that gap and to maintain the guidance. But there are levers that we can pull and dollars that we can pull back on from a budget perspective.
Hey Chuck, this is Richard. And just to add to that, we also haven't given up on our original top-line growth goals. We go back to our sales teams and say, hey, we were a little short in the first quarter. How are you going to make up the difference? So it's not just bottom line. We have some levers we can pull to make sure we're hitting both of those.
Okay. And looking at the Santa Cruz brand where it had some volume contraction in the quarter, anything going on there that's different from the overall organic category trends that might explain that, or is it distribution related? Just curious about that brand's performance.
Sure. Hi, Chuck. Steve Oakland. Chuck, if you remember, we made a conscious decision. A large piece of the volume of Santa Cruz Organic was lemonade. And that lemonade was promoted across traditional grocery at very aggressive price points, 10 for 10s for organic lemonade. And 2 years ago, we stepped away from that, and we've positioned that brand more consistent with the way it's positioned across other categories and other beverages. And we've taken those price points up. So really, other than that, the Santa Cruz brand is very healthy today, as is our – we had a great quarter in traditional Knudsen beverages. So if you strip the noise out from the lemonade change – actually, we see growth in that business now, and we see a lot of opportunities to extend it. As you know, it's in pouched organic applesauce. It's in peanut butter. It's in a lot of other categories.
All right. Thank you much.
Next, we'll hear from Jason English of Goldman Sachs. Please state your question.
Hey, good morning, folks.
Hey, Jason.
Good morning.
Mark, on the last quarter conference call, you kind of detailed the algorithm in terms of gross profit growth expectations, SD&A growth expectations, as well as sales. Can you update us on your thinking on each of those line items?
Yeah, I think that there's not going to be dramatic changes from original. I mean, a little bit of the SD&A should improve just from the commentary that we've had as, you know, as it relates to administrative type expenses and marketing. You know, that's where that would fall out. But, you know, my gross profit comments earlier, you know, there's a little bit of a mix shift when, you know, moving from coffee. But, I don't think it's significant from our original expectations. And, again, you know, keep coming back. We still are original guidance. So, you know, I think you'll see a little bit of improvement on the SD&A side over the course of the remaining three quarters and, you know, maybe just a little bit of erosion at gross profit. But, you know, hopefully we can compensate that based upon what Richard's comments were and driving some additional sales, particularly in coffee.
When you say a little bit of erosion of gross profit, are you comparing that to the first quarter, or are you suggesting that gross margins can be down year on year?
No, I, from my original commentary for the fiscal year. I don't have exactly my language. I know we didn't get specific basis points increases out of the beginning of the year, but I think we said that gross profit would be sort of in line with our income before tax expectations, so it's like 3 to 4%. I think that's still kind of what we're looking at.
Yeah, you had suggested that gross profit would grow below sales modestly, suggesting a modest degree of gross margin compression year on year. It sounds like maybe that's still the case, or it could be a little bit better. Is that fair?
That's fair.
And then in terms of sales, you were expecting volume growth for the full year. It came in a little bit light despite the price investment this quarter, and obviously the expectations for price to ramp. How are you thinking about volume for the full year now?
Yeah, if you look across the business, and again, you always have to be a little careful because mix creeps into this because, as you know, in this quarter we had baking was down, which is a large volume, you know, low sale dollar, low margin business. But I would say that we expected a modest increase at the beginning of the year, and we probably see that tweaking down just a little bit to being flat. I mean, we're talking about percentage point, basically. So closer to flat, but again, mix will come into play over the course of the year depending upon where that volume shakes out.
That's helpful. Thank you. I'll pass it on.
Next, we'll take a follow-up question from David Driscoll of Citi. Please state your question.
Great. Thank you for taking the follow-up question. Just wanted to ask a little bit about the Life is Good brand and what happened there. So, I mean, generally, it's my view that launching a new brand is an expensive proposition, especially in a category that's got, you know, many, many, many brands in there. Just love to understand kind of why did this brand fail? What did you guys learn from the whole experience of launching the Life is Good product?
Sure, David. It's Mark Smucker. I would start just by saying that the relationship with the Life is Good folks is fantastic. And, you know, we really had a lot in common with those guys. They do a very nice job with their brand. But at the end of the day, we felt that coffee, we did some research, we felt that coffee and their brand did well together. What we learned, although the products were very good products, what we learned is that the relevancy of that brand was very, was decent on the coasts, so on the East and West Coast, but elsewhere was the brand awareness was very low. And so we just saw good trial out of the gate, but poor repeat purchase because I think the consumer has a number of choices in that category, and that brand, unfortunately, just did not survive.
Okay, final question for me, unrelated. Mark, can you just clarify for me, what is your marketing spending plan for the year? How much do you think marketing will be up?
Well, obviously, David, we're still, you know, the teams are still working through it. I would suspect that we'll be basically in line, maybe slightly above last year's spend. And again, just to reiterate, I've made this commentary on a couple quarters where we've adjusted marketing, is that we're committed to marketing a good portion of it, but there's some flexibility. And we underscore that we're quite comfortable with what we have on air. We did a lot of production last year, so we got some great commercials that are still in the can to be run. So we're looking at those dollars that either had more flexibility or will not have a dramatic impact. But I suspect it'll be right about last year's level, maybe just a tad bit above.
Super. Thank you.
We'll take our next follow-up question from Akshay Jagdale of KeyBanc Capital Markets. Please state your question.
Thanks for taking the follow-up. Mark, you mentioned the mid-single-digit growth expectation for volumes and K-Cups. I mean, you had 8% growth this quarter. The category is still growing double digits, and your share is improving. So why is that not – I mean, I understand it. You want to be conservative, but is my characterization of it being conservative in light of the facts we've seen so far – is that the right characterization, or why should we expect 5% growth when your share is improving and the category is growing double digits?
Yeah, Akshay, I think the short answer would be that, you know, we're still in the process of filling the pipeline with both new products and some of the new channels that we recently got rights for, offset by some of the recent declines in the Millstone items.
Okay, so still there's a lot of moving parts and need some time to get more visibility. Is that a good way to think about it?
You got it.
Okay. And then just overall on your guidance for the full year, so what came in, so why did the coffee business margins or sales come in below your expectation? I mean, what was the drivers of that? Was that the pricing to cost lag, take-up business? Can you give us some color on that and maybe an order of magnitude?
Akshay, this is Vince. I think we need to take a step back. I mean, we grew the coffee business 2% in the quarter, coming off a strong quarter last year, and we grew virtually every brand. And so although, yes, we might have had even higher expectations, we're very, very pleased with the way we started the fiscal year on coffee. Again, Roast and Ground has grown for 9 consecutive quarters, and you know, I think we are very, very pleased with that result. So, yes, it might have been slightly below our expectations, but if you take a step back and look at those results, we feel very good, and I think we're positioned for the balance of the year.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll pass it on.
Thanks.
We'll now take a follow-up question from Robert Moskow with Credit Suisse.
I think people listening to this call might want to go back to the beach, but I'm going to ask a broader question about merchandising environment at retail heading into back to school and then also into the fall bake. I've heard a lot of packaged food manufacturers lament the fact that merchandising has gotten overcrowded and that there's been a big shift to value channels, and these have been kind of real limiting factors. Are you seeing those same issues as you head into this fall? And have you taken any steps to compensate for it? How is this environment different from last year's environment from a merchandising perspective?
Robert, I think you're correct. If you read what's going on in our industry and from what our peers are saying, there is a lot of merchandising activity, and to some degree we're all competing regardless of categories. But we feel very comfortable, as Paul Wagstaff articulated earlier, with both our back-to-school activity. In fact, one could argue that we have more merchandising this year than we've had in the last few years. And then secondly, as we look into the holiday period, we feel very, very comfortable. We feel comfortable with our price points on across our portfolio. So there's no doubt that it's a challenge, but we can't use that as an excuse. We have leading brands, and we need to make sure that we get our fair share of those opportunities and programs.
And you said you're very comfortable with those price points. Are those price points below where they were a year or two ago because the commodities are more favorable, so that gives you that flexibility?
It's going to vary by each of the segments, as primarily Mark and Paul have articulated, because where the particular commodity rests. And again, Crisco oil would be down, peanut butter may be up, et cetera, et cetera. It won't go back, won't rehash them all, but it's going to vary.
Okay, thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time. I will now turn the conference call back to management to conclude.
We'd like to thank everybody for being on the call, and hopefully you can get back to your vacations if that's where you are. I can rest assured we're not going back to the beach in Ohio. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to access the rebroadcast after this live call, you may do so by dialing 888-203-1112 or 719-457-0820 with a passcode of 573-5316. This concludes our conference call for today. Thank you all for participating and have a nice day. All parties may now disconnect.